You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
I'm Smelly the dog. I am a mutt. I'm Smelly the dog. I'm super smiley. I have a cat, two sweets, the travel kitty. I'm a good girlfriend. Angel's really pretty. I have a pony. We share a big horse. We have a big yard. Yeah, we have to, of course. I have a pool. In the summer, I stay cool. We have a fountain. Live in the mountain. Live high on the hog. Need to be a spokes dog. I'm Smelly the dog. I am a mutt. I'm Smelly the dog. I'm super smiley.
Woof and Super Smiles. Welcome to a Super Smiley adventure on Pet Life Radio, the largest pet radio network in the world. I'm Megan Blake, the pet lifestyle coach, here with my possum sidekick, Super Smiley, the national spokes dog for the American Humane Association Hero Dog Awards, reminding everyone to vote for their favorite hero dog at herodogawards.org. The Hero Dog Awards is an amazing star-studded event. I mean animal-loving stars like Betty White, Victoria Stilwell, all out to honor the bond between humans and dogs, with categories including war dogs, police dogs, therapy dogs, and all of them are heroes. And as the pet lifestyle coach, I travel the country with Smiley, helping people adopt the right pet for their lifestyle and help train them so they keep that pet forever. And here on a Super Smiley adventure, we explore adventures where animals lead. They can be journeys for animal advocacy, for adventure and fun, and they almost always lead to paths of inner discovery and greater bonding with our pets. And that's why Smiley and I are so happy to introduce you to our guest today, because his work helps keep dogs in homes and integrated into families. Stephen Applebaum is the founder and president of the Animal Behavior College, ABC, the largest animal career college of its kind in North America. Steve's first company, Animal Behavior and Training Associates, moved into major pet stores, including Petco. And Pet Products News named Steve one of the top 25 most influential people in the pet industry. Hey, Steve, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure.
And so, Steve, first, I want to thank you so much for what you do, because I believe that you really do help pets stay in their homes forever.
Oh, you're very welcome, and thank you.
And Steve, do you remember you and I first met a few years ago at the Pet Expo USA? Smiley and I were their official spokes team, and you were always there with ABC to help people with their pets. That was a cool event, wasn't it?
It was a cool event. It's one of the things that I like about the pet business is that, you know, it's possible for people with new products, people with services, to actually have an idea, to take it to market, and to be able to succeed. And in doing so, not only will they be successful for themselves, but they'll also, more often than not, help people and, of course, the pets.
Absolutely. And that, like I said, that's exactly what you were doing. And Steve, you have done so many things and you've influenced so many people and animals. Did you know as a child that you would work with dogs and be this influential on so many lives?
No. Really. I mean, I loved dogs as a kid. I was one of the guys that would, you know, approach strange dogs even when I probably shouldn't have. I mean, honestly, I'm at an age now where I don't remember everything I thought of as a kid, but I certainly don't have any recollection of thinking as a, you know, 7 or 8 year old, wow, you know, I think I'm going to own a vocational college for animal related careers when I'm older. At one time I wanted to be a veterinarian, and I certainly liked the training of dogs at a relatively young age. And I was always sort of an animal kid. My parents would say I was kind of like a small animal, but that's a little bit different. And I was fortunate. I mean, I was, part of it was just being in the right place at the right time and, you know, recognizing trends that were going on in the pet business and being able to follow a passion. I mean, this was something that was fabulous for me because I was able to create a business that really does help pets and the people who love them. That's, to me, every day I wake up, you know, and I think to myself, wow, I mean, you know, we're doing some great things.
And Steve,
it's not just
you
about
really
me.
Are.
I mean, it's really about all the people whose lives we can influence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so happy that you're doing this and that we're having you on the show so you can tell us about what you are doing. And I found this fascinating, that one of the first positions you had with dogs was in the Air Force as a dog handler and trainer. What was that like, working with dogs trained to that level? What was that like?
It was fun. It was fun and it was interesting. Originally, I wanted to go into law enforcement.
Okay.
And, you know, so as an SP canine handler, I mean, that is essentially a law enforcement position. You're part of the security police. In the Air Force, they're called SPs, security police, and that's comparable to MPs, you know,
right,
what, like you'd find in the Army, military police, same thing. So, I mean, that was a really interesting time in my life. I realized that for me, law enforcement wasn't going to be my path, but I certainly loved working with the animals, with the dogs, really. It was all dogs. And when I got out of service, I started a training business, really sort of just to figure out what I was going to do when I grew up. I knew I wasn't going to be a cop at that point. I was out of the service. I was 22 years old. And, you know, I knew I was probably ultimately going to wind up going back to school, but wasn't ready to do that just then. And so I figured I would train until I figured out what I was going to do. I found almost immediately that I was able to make a good living. I liked it. I was able to help people. And I was also able to help people in a tangible way. You know, a lot of people, when they give to a charity, they hope that their giving to that charity will result in a change, feeding hungry people, whatever it is. If they volunteer somewhere, they can see during that day that maybe they're going to make a difference, but in the overall scheme of things, they may not be sure that they're making a difference because they're only in it for a day. But when I was working with people and training with them over a period of weeks or months, you could see an absolute difference in the lives of their pets and of the kind of relationship they have with their pets. And so it was really a fantastic thing. It really appealed to me because I could see the difference. Yeah, but the Air Force was an interesting time, and it was a lot of fun. You know, and I often wondered what would have happened had I stayed in, or, you know, had I taken another path when I got out. But I think that the path I wound up taking was a good one.
Steve, you've got so much to talk about. We're going to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to hear about your training tips, about how the industry has changed, and about Animal Behavior College. I'm really excited. We're going to be right back with Steve Applebaum. Smiley, can you wait? Good boy.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
I'm Smiley Dog. I'm Super Smiley. Let's rock.
Petco. Where the pets go. Petco. Where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back on a Super Smiley Adventure with Steve Applebaum, the president of ABC, the Animal Behavior College. Now, first, the very basic question, Steve. I think that by training a dog, you actually help keep them in their homes. From your very professional vantage point, how important is it for dog stewards to train their dogs?
Hugely important. I have read varying statistics, but generally, most statistics that I have seen point to anywhere from about 30 to as high as 60% of dogs that wind up in shelters wind up there because of some sort of untreated behavioral problems.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily talking about aggression. I mean, people automatically think, oh, yeah, you know, the dog will be vicious or something like that. I believe I read somewhere that was only like about 8 or 9% of dogs that wind up. So a lot of times it's just they're too rambunctious, they jump up on people, they chew, they bark. Normal dog behaviors that can be treated, but people don't know how to deal with them, and so the dogs wind up in shelters.
Right.
So that's a huge challenge. When you work with dogs in shelters, it makes them more adoptable as well.
Absolutely. And ABC, what I love, its entire college devoted to teaching students to become dog trainers. And it's a lot more than just teaching students, like you just said, to train sit, stay, down, come, heel. You start with a very basic study of how canines learn. So teach us a little right now about dogs. How do dogs learn?
Mostly by association, not too dissimilarly to the way we learn.
Okay.
Also, the thing to understand about dog behavior is, like human behavior, dogs typically do what works for them, what feels good. You know, a dog that chews on your shoe isn't chewing on your shoe to make your life miserable. It may make your life miserable, and it may be expensive, but they're chewing on your shoe because they like the way it tastes. They enjoy the scent. It's a positive behavior for them.
Yeah.
And so understanding that, and also understanding that if you can take the behavior that you want to be stronger to occur mm-hmm. more frequently and positively reinforce that, you will over time find that that behavior will take over from behaviors that you don't want. So let's take chewing as an example.
Good.
Dogs chew because they like to explore things and they don't have hands. They enjoy the taste. They enjoy the scent. It's just a pleasurable experience for them. Most puppies will chew. They're
right.
teething as well. Not all dogs outgrow that because just like people, what can start being stimulated by one thing can become a habit. And after a while, they just learn to like to chew, and that's just what they do. Regardless of the reasons why, if you have a dog that chews, chances are, rather than trying to just focus on stopping what you don't like, you would be better off focusing on getting the dog to chew things that you don't care about. So, for example,
right.
instead of shoes, if you taught the dog to chew on, say, an appropriate toy, if you could get the dog to chew on a toy 60 or 70% more than he or she does now, then logically they're going to chew on the wrong thing 60 or 70% less. So the focus is on strengthening an appropriate behavior through positive means as opposed to focusing primarily just on punishment, which, by the way, is a different kind of approach than what was mainstream, you know, say 30 or 40 years ago.
Okay. Okay. And I love what you just used the example of chewing. And with my dogs, Angel and Smiley, they have lots of toys and they absolutely know what their toys are. They would never get my sock or my shoe, which, as you mentioned, would have a lot of my scent on it, but they know
right.
what their toys are and they love their toys. They go get them and they do the little bouncy play behavior because they've associated those toys with that fun, emotional
right.
behavior, right? So,
that's
so
exactly
Steve.
Exactly right.
Yes. So, Steve, what is the most important thing? I know there are a zillion things. That's why people go to your college and why we have dog trainers. But right now on our show, what's the most important thing that we dog owners can do in training our dogs?
I would say there are a few things. One, understand that training takes time. I realize that most people, myself included, I'm guilty of this, want things yesterday. We live in a very immediate gratification kind of a society. And especially when you're trying to teach a dog to stop doing something, or you just simply want the dog to magically learn to listen, it's not reasonable to expect that this is going to occur overnight. So patience is absolutely critical. Also understand that training is about repetition, which means
right.
practice. The same way we don't learn behaviors after one or two times, usually, dogs are generally not going to pick up new behaviors, or you're not going to eliminate old behaviors after one or two repetitions. So
right.
you need to be prepared to practice. Like I said, have patience. And then, again, to focus more on what you want the dog to do than what you don't want the dog to do.
I love that. I love that. And in working with so many clients, not only training the teachers, but with actual people who own dogs, have you found one or two issues that were more common problems that people have with their dogs that you helped with?
Yeah, I mean, the more common behavioral challenges are jumping up on people.
Yes.
Chewing things, digging, house soiling, you know, general rambunctiousness. Those are the very typical behavior. You can certainly run into more difficult behaviors like aggression, you know, various phobias. Those are the ones that people oftentimes like to focus on or want to hear about. But in truth, they're far less common than just, you know, I've got this 8-month-old 65-pound Labrador puppy that's leaping all over people and chewing everything in the house and has dug a trench from just about half my yard to the gate, you know,
right,
that kind of thing.
Right.
Not to pick on labs, that's just a very popular breed. They're actually wonderful dogs, and I have a lab, but that's typical. And that combined with just teaching the dog to learn some basic cues, or sometimes known as commands. The old style is commands, the new language is cues. It's the same thing. Basically to sit, to stay, to come, to lay down, to walk properly on a leash, or at least loose leash walk, meaning the dog doesn't drag you down the street. Just simple
right.
manners coupled with behavior. It's important to understand that my school, Animal Behavior College, we're not training the dogs. We're training the trainers.
Right.
We're training professional dog trainers who will go out in the world and, you know, help people, hopefully for many years to come. We also have a grooming program, so we train professional groomers. We'll probably have 1,000 students take that course in 2014. And we also have a program for veterinary assistants, which the last 2 years ago became our most popular course. Even though the school was founded by myself and some of my earlier people, many of whom are still with me 25 years later, are all dog trainers, The veterinary assistant program will have about 2,200 students this year, and the dog obedience program, the dog trainer program, will have about 2,100 students. So those are the two big programs, with grooming coming up in third place. It's so the school is not just for dog trainers. It's for people that want to make a difference in dogs' lives in a number of different ways. You know, so you may have some people that have sort of an artistic bent, you know, that like the idea of grooming. Dog groomer can make a great living at that, and you know, you can be working with dogs all day long. For some people, they love this. And of course, if you're interested in medicine, you want to get involved on the veterinary team, veterinary assistant is an entry-level way to do that. Many of our students go on to become vet techs. So these are wonderful professions.
They are. And I love that your college does embrace these different areas. As you said, training, veterinary assistants, grooming. It is a wonderful, wonderful program, establishment, college that you have created here. And you mentioned this, you've kind of alluded to this, and I would like to ask you the question, how has dog training changed or evolved over the years? I'm sure you've witnessed this as well as just studying about it. Tell us about that.
I have. Dog training back when I got started in the late 70s, was still very much compulsion-based, meaning that the dog was taught mostly to avoid some sort of physical correction. So the perfect example of that would be, back then, we were taught that the way to stop a dog from jumping up on you, you know, the exuberant kind of hi dad, hi mom greeting, was to knee the dog in the chest. Now, look, most trainers were not suggesting that, you know, you slam the dog so hard the dog falls over backwards gasping. Nobody was suggesting the dog be hurt. But, I mean, let's face it, you were trying to create a negative experience. You were trying to cause some discomfort when the dog jumped up and got a knee in his or her chest in the hopes that the dog would learn to avoid the knee and not jump. And it does work, but you run into potential challenges with that. First off, you can injure the dog.
Yes.
Second off, you're basically teaching your children, and you yourself are resorting to the use of physical force as a first resort with a highly intelligent, sentient being. I mean, that may seem a little, you know, new agey or whatnot, but it's unnecessary. It's also almost impossible to knee a dog in the chest that only comes up to your shin. So good luck trying that with a small dog.
There you go, right.
You know, or when the dogs jump on you from behind, or if you're dealing with your 80-year-old mom or dad who no way has the physical ability to do that, or a 5-year-old child. So there were real limitations to this type of training methodology. Now, contrast that today with a completely different mindset. Now, when you're dealing with jumping, we teach people that the best move to make is to understand why the dog jumps, which is mostly to get attention. It's also obviously an inappropriate form of greeting. So when the dog jumps, the thing for you to do is to simply ignore the behavior. Easier said than done, I'll grant you.
Yeah.
After a while, what will happen is, and it can take, you know, 30 seconds or 5 minutes, but what will happen is the dog will come back to you kind of inquisitively and either not jump or possibly even sit. And when the dog is on all fours and then you greet the dog, which of course will immediately stimulate the jumping and you got to go through the whole process over again, over time what will happen is that the dog will learn that jumping does not get the attention or the response that the dog is looking for, but coming to you on all fours or sitting does. And when, of course, the dog comes on all fours or sits, you reinforce that to strengthen that behavior, like I was alluding to earlier. Over time, what you can do is you can teach the dog to greet you on all fours or by sitting as opposed to jumping without having to resort to the crushing knee in the chest technique that we all used, you know, 40-plus years ago.
Right.
So the training methodologies have changed, which, by the way, is not to suggest that there is never a place for punishment. I realize that can be a controversial subject, but there are situations in which there can be negative ramifications for certain behavior. But what we teach is that it should certainly never be as a first response.
Now, right. I love that.
But, you know, we try to teach a balanced approach to our students because they have to go out there in the world and actually, you know, perform. They actually have to go out there and earn a living doing this. So we want to give them all the tools they need. But to, you know, clearly understand that, you know, the use of punishment is, gosh, I mean, it's kind of, should be a last resort, if
ever. Right. I love your materials, Steve. I have seen them. I have a CPDT certification for everybody. That's Certification of Professional Dog Trainers. And I love Steve's materials. So Smiley and I give ABC 4 paws up. And
Thank you.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I'm a member of the APDT as well. And, you know, I think that as an organization, they do some fantastic work and they create awareness. So it's an excellent place for trainers to go to learn more. I mean, their educational conference is first rate, and that, by the way, is also very different than what it was like 40 years ago. you know, or 30 years ago, where these organizations didn't exist. Trainers were almost exclusively self-taught, you know, or came from military backgrounds or 4-H or whatever, didn't really speak to each other and didn't really have anywhere to go to connect with other trainers. Not an organization like APDT or, you know, NADOY. Well, NADOY's been around for a while, but they tended to be more oriented towards shows.
Yes.
Regardless, it's much different now than it was then, and I think it's better now than it was then.
Right. I do, too. I'm so happy to be involved at this day and age, at this time. And, Steve, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear more of ABC's continued education programs, like working with shelter dogs. We love that. And about the dogs in Steve's life. Smiley, can you wait? Good boy.
Sit. Stay. We'll be right back after a short pause. Well, four to be exact.
I'm Smiley Dog. I'm Super Smiley. Must rock.
Dyson. The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radial root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
This is Dr. Robin Gansert, host of Be Humane on Pet Life Radio. Just want to remind you that voting for the 4th Annual Hero Dog Awards is open until June 6th. Simply visit herodogawards.org every day to vote in each of our 8 categories. I know you'll be inspired by these brave canines. That's herodogawards.org.
Victoria Schaefer, aspiring actress, babysitter extraordinaire, college student, and animal enthusiast, is on her own for the first time in New York City. Follow Victoria and her 2 dogs, Rue and Echo, as she cares for her furry friends and juggles home life and career, all the while managing to survive in the world's most hectic city. The exciting animal adventures and secret stories from both ends of the leash that make up the Tales of the City.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back on a Super Smiley Adventure with Steve Applebaum, the president of Animal Behavior College. And Steve, a big part of dog training is simply diagnosing what the real issue is. Like, is the dog barking because it's nervous or aggressive or just has too much energy? So are there some ways that we can better learn to read our dogs, what the dogs are telling us?
Oh, absolutely. Dogs are social, intelligent beings.
Yeah.
And they communicate with one another through a variety of body postures. And in fact, as more and more studies are done, we learn that the dogs communicate in far more subtle and sophisticated ways than we had imagined. And I suspect we will continue to learn more as, increased science-based studies, you know, come to the forefront and, you know, not just scientists, but the lay people actually learn to understand what they're trying to say to one another. But you can learn all sorts of things just from the dog's body posture, the way they hold their tail, assuming they have a tail, the way they hold their ears, the way they approach you. They're communicating a whole myriad of emotions, from discomfort to feeling comfortable, to feeling threatened, to feeling fearful, to potentially being aggressive. Most dogs, see, the thing to understand about dogs is, although dogs are certainly product of human beings, you don't see domesticated dogs in the wild, dogs communicate with one another in a fashion really designed to avoid conflict or to minimize conflict. Because, I mean, let's face it, conflict has the potential to cause injury, and injury means that you're not able to get around, you know, potentially you're not able to hunt. It's not something that they want to do instinctively. So they have a whole series of communication systems set up to really avoid conflict, or at least serious conflict, whenever possible. You can learn to read a lot of that. And you can certainly become enough of an expert on doggy body language and doggy communication that you will have a better sense of where your dog is coming from.
That leads to my next question. And going to people's homes and training dogs, how much is training the dogs and how much is actually educating or training the person?
Yeah, there are lots of different training programs out there. I found that the most effective ones and the ones we teach our students are really more owner training or pet parent training than dog training. I mean, you need to be able to walk the walk. But so, you know, clearly you need to be able to actually get down there and train the dog. But it's really owner training. And I told people for years, look, I can teach the dog to sit and come and lay down for me. And once a dog understands those concepts and is doing them consistently, regardless of distraction, it will certainly be easier for you as an owner to learn how to handle an already trained dog. But there's still going to need to be some work involved. And you still have to understand, and this gets back to the repetition, that if, for example, I'm coming over to the house, let's say, three times a week, and I'm working on the sit cue, where I want the dog to sit when I say. And so I'll do that maybe, I don't know, 150 times, 200 times a week. Okay, it's a lot of repetition.
Right. Yes.
Okay, but as an owner, you interact with the dog 7 days a week. And 20 times a day, you give the sit cue without any reinforcement whatsoever. You're just saying, sit, 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 sit. So 150 times a week, I'm being consistent. 7 times 20, 140 times a week, you're giving the exact same cue and not being consistent. What do you think the dog's going to learn?
Yeah.
To listen to me and not to you. So part of it is making the owners a bit more aware of some of the mixed messages they may be giving.
Right.
And then when it comes to behavior challenges, that's a completely different thing. I mean, I would tell people, look, short of moving in, which is really not an option, I'm not going to be able to teach your dog to stop going potty in the bedroom. It's not going to happen. I can show you how. I mean, I can set you up on a, you know, a proper regimen, a proper schedule. I can teach the dog not to jump on me, but the dog may still jump on you. So it's really owner training more than anything.
You're absolutely right. And at the Animal Behavior College, you also, I read that you give students real life experiences, sometimes with shelter dogs and externships. Tell us about this that people can do if they come to your college.
The program is a combination of distance learning coupled with a hands-on portion, which we called an externship.
I love that.
Every student that takes the program has to do this because, I mean, let's face it, dog training is a hands-on profession. And there is no way, just understanding theoretical principles of behavior, that you're going to be able to go out there and actually train. You've got to get out in the trenches and do it.
Right.
And rather than just have you go out on your own and do it and make mistakes, which everybody will do, we would rather pair you with a professional trainer, whom we call a mentor, that we screen. And so that this way, as part of your course of study with the school, you not only get the theoretical understanding of this, but you get to get some practical hands-on experience, first observing and then assisting with an actual trainer. Many of our students are hired by our mentors after they graduate. Some will go off and start their own businesses. Some will be hired and then over time will decide to go off on their own and start their own businesses. That's the externship. Now, in 2004, I realized something that had been kind of percolating for a number of years. You know, it used to be when you would talk to people in the shelter community or the rescue world, they would have a mantra. And the mantra was spay and neuter, spay and neuter, spay and neuter. We need to get less population, less unwanted dogs out there. There'll be fewer dogs that wind up in shelters, which is true, and it's true to this day. But over time, they realized that there was another component to the puzzle or to the solution, and that was train.
Absolutely.
So the mantra became spay, neuter, train, right? I mean, if you were there, so we wanted our students to start to work with local shelters. And we wanted them to do this for several reasons. One, because we knew that training, being a helping profession, meant that the people involved would instinctively, intuitively want to give back. This just seems to be the nature. It's kind of in the DNA of most dog trainers. And what better place for trainers to be able to give back than at a local shelter where they could actually help the shelter with training some of the dogs, making them more adoptable, perhaps cutting down on the recidivism rate, the number of dogs that are returned. So it was an absolute win for the trainers. It's a win for the shelter. And it was also a great way for trainers to start to build relationships with some of the shelters who would over time come to refer them to help them in their business. So we just thought it was going to be a great program all the way around. It was voluntary for our students. Being the cynic that I am, when we set it up, I had initially assumed that about 50, maybe 60% of our students would actually do this, where we wanted them to give at least 10 hours of voluntary time to a local animal shelter. It was not a prerequisite for graduation, although in order to be an honors graduate, you had to do it. But, you know, we couldn't say if you don't volunteer your time, you can't graduate. That's not really voluntary at that point. So I figured about probably 90% would say they'd do it, and about 50 or 60% would do it. Well, I was wrong. About 96% say they'll do it, And just a little over 94% actually do.
That is so cool.
It's a crazy number.
And I think you know that Smiley is a 2-time shelter dog, and my German Shepherd was a 4-time shelter dog. So we are just so, we're so excited that you include shelter work. I know that your students are learning by working with the shelter dogs, and it's just also wonderful to help these dogs find homes. And I want to mention here, our listeners, most of our listeners know that Smiley has the Happy Campaign for Pet Adoption, which is the Super Smiley Flash Mob for Pet Adoption. And Smiley's documentaries have been touring the country, raising the energy for pet adoption and kindness. And so we really, really support your work there, Steve. And I want to invite everybody to check out Smiley's documentaries, our flash mobs, at smileythedog.com or at youtube.com/Megan Blake. All of our stuff's there. And Steve, while I'm giving my websites, where can people go to sign up for your college, to read about your college? What's your website? Tell everybody.
The website is animalbehaviorcollege.com.
That's very easy.
Yep.
Very good.
Pretty basic. And for those people, and I know there are a few out there that maybe they'll want to check out the website, but when it comes to actually inquiring, they'll want to speak to a real person. I can give a phone number as well.
Please do. Please do, yes.
And that's 800-795-3294. 800-795-3294. Or check us out on at animalbehaviorcollege.com. Check us out on Facebook. We're doing all the social media. And
You know what? I need to join you all on Facebook. I haven't seen you on Facebook, so we will do that.
I was going to mention that. We should probably do some support of each other's rescue.
Absolutely. So on Facebook, are you Animal Behavior College or ABC?
Animal Behavior College.
Oh, good. And on Facebook, Smiley is Super Smiley, so we're going to be seeing Super Smiley and Animal Behavior College hooking up this afternoon.
That's great.
And Steve, tell us about the dogs in your life. Who have you got at your house now?
Well, I have a Basset Hound.
Oh, my gosh, I love
I have a Basset Hound named Truffles. Truffles was rescued from a Basset rescue here in Southern California.
Oh, bless you.
That had literally 60 or 70 Bassets at their location.
Oh, my
which
gosh.
Which I'd never seen that many before. She would let them out in packs of 30 at a time. If you've ever seen 30 Bassets running together, it is surreal.
They do that bar.
Oh, my gosh. It's hysterical. So I have a Basset named Truffles and a giant chocolate lab named Sam.
Oh, how cute. How cute. And Steve, I know in my life animals are healers and teachers. Have Sam and Truffles, have they taught you anything about life aside from dog training? What have they taught you about life?
You know, some of them are, it's a little cliche, but that doesn't mean it isn't true. They certainly remind me about patience.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a, oh my God, they're driving me crazy kind of a thing. Sometimes it just pays to take a step back and think things through and be more patient. They also teach me something that I kind of already know, so it's really not teaching but reinforcement, which is that dogs are phenomenal about living in the moment.
Yeah,
and,
so true.
And that's
so
not always easy to do. I mean, we all hear live in the moment, and that's, you know, great, except when you've got 1,000 things you're worrying about, you know, that might impact your future. So how do you balance living in the moment with being a responsible adult and making plans for the future? And, you know, blah, 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 your head can immediately take over that debate and bring it in the wrong direction, but sometimes, or in the right direction, because you do sometimes have to plan for the future, but you know what? You can still live in the moment, and all you have to do to be reminded of that is watch the dogs. And so, you know, certainly the unconditional love piece and, you know, all of that good stuff. It really doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor, whether you're, you know, considered physically attractive by human standards or not. Dogs are pretty equal opportunity lovers.
That's right.
Just give them a belly rub.
Like you said, they remind us because we are human. We do have responsibilities. We do have the world coming at us, but the dogs remind us to go back to that grounded, balanced in the present moment. Yes, and they always lead us on adventures, and that's why our show is called A Super Smiley Adventure. And on our show coming up, we're going to have the Genesis Awards with lots of stars shining their light on the animals. And we're going to have Paul Wesley from The Vampire Diaries, Carrie Preston from The Good Wife, Charlotte Ross, and a cat Academy Award winner James Cromwell. Oh, Victoria Summer from Saving Mr. Banks. And she played Julie Andrews, which is so cool, and lots, lots more. And I want to thank the American Humane Association also for asking Super Smiley to be the American Humane Association Hero Dog Awards spokesdog. So everybody, remember to vote for your favorite hero dog at herodogawards.org. And today, a giant thank you to Steve Applebaum. Baum from the Animal Behavior College. Steve, thank you so much for all you do for dogs and their people.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure. And give me a call and I'm happy to come on anytime.
Wonderful. And from all of us here at Pet Life Radio on a Super Smiley Adventure, we hope you enjoy all your adventures with your pets. And until next time, woof and super smiles.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.